Okay, we are in heavenly places, of course. And this is dated July 18th for today. It's page 206 if you have the book or booklet. It's a little thing. And it's titled Keeping Love Alive. And it starts off with Colossians chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. And it says, Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, as it is fit in the Lord. And husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. And this is where the enemy of souls will tempt you in a big way. All right, let me find that verse. Hold on, because she might even touch on this, but just in case she doesn't. Let's see. Where is it? Yeah, because I found out early on, I used to have, I was raised in a very dysfunctional family. Let's see. Oops. Boy, it's hard to do this with a microphone. Okay. 1 Peter. It says, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Now, before I read this verse, I used to have, like I said, I was raised in a very dysfunctional family. And the mindset of the family, and I kid you not, this is the way it was, and it seemed perfectly acceptable to everybody, except me. I didn't like it. That's why I would always leave the house when I was real young, and I would go out and talk to God because I didn't have any other friends. I couldn't go hang out with guys at school. They just beat me up. And when I would, you know, hang out with my siblings, they would tease all day, and it was just one big fight, you know, because I had 10 siblings. That's right. I used to be Catholic. And I believe that's why the Catholic Church invented the rhythm method, because it doesn't work. It allows, it's a rhythm, in other words, as to when the woman is ready to have a baby or something like that, and they kind of go, it's kind of like a biorhythm kind of a thing. It doesn't work, it's useless. And in other words, they frown on birth control because, well, look at the immigration problem we got now. The Roman Catholic Church is losing people in droves in this nation because of the sex scandals and all the idiocies that they're doing in politics. And so they're losing their voting block. And so they got to bring in the immigrants because they're blindly loyal to the Catholic Church. And this is the way it was in the 50s when we were growing up, 40s and 50s. My parents were devout Catholics. And so, but anyway, to make a long story short, it was the constant bickering in the house, and the mindset was, you only hurt the ones you love. And so when I would go out into the world, I would be very, you know, gentle and loving to people, you know, and as I grew up. And then even when I became, you know, hung out in biker bars and stuff like that, I still never started any fights. All right, I take that back. One time I did, but, you know, that was weird. But anyway, you would think I was always fighting, but I wasn't. My brothers were. They had problems in that area, but I never did. I never cared for that because of the, you know, I loved the underdog because I was one when I was a kid. And so it was kind of burning in my brain, as was the mindset of you only hurt the ones you love. And so as a kid, growing up in that kind of world, if you will, when I got a wife and kids, I would come home and bring my work home and bring my anger and my frustration into the house. But I wouldn't do it on the street. I wouldn't do it to my customers. I wouldn't do it to coworkers. I wouldn't do it to anybody, you know, 99% of the time. But at home, I would just let it loose because you only hurt the ones you love. And I just figured, hey, you know, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. You know, my wife will understand. The kids will understand. I really love them, but that's just not true. And then I read 1 Peter 3:7 one day, and I couldn't figure out why I was having a hard time getting my prayers answered. Because I was being a jerk to my wife, and I was being a jerk to my wife for years. And this is when I was a Sunday keeper, I read this passage. And it says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge. Give honor unto the wife, as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks. When I started working in that area from that day forward, and I praise his name for that, because my prayer life did get kicked up a notch after that. So she goes on to say that how much trouble and what a tide of woe and unhappiness would be saved if men and women also would continue to cultivate the regard, attention, and kind words of appreciation and little courtesies of life, which kept love alive and which they felt were necessary in gaining the companions of their choice. You know, you hear people talking about all the time on the street, or just people that you know, oh, I'm looking for my cellmate. Cellmate. Yeah, that's what you hear in prison. Now, I'm looking for my soulmate. That's what they would always say, right? And then I remember this one guy, you know, because the womanizing thing was popular in the 70s and 80s, of course. And I always thought, you know, it's, you know, anybody can love a lot of women. A real man loves one woman, you know, and for a lifetime. You know, anybody can just go out there and, you know, I mean, come on, just go to Vegas. There's legal brothels there now. So anybody, if you call that love, that's today's world. That's the world's definition of love now. But it's an amazing thing to actually have a companion. You know, it's a blessing, in fact. Like Proverbs says, it's better to, well, I'm going to paraphrase, of course, but there's actually a couple, three different ways it says it in Proverbs in regards to it's better to live in a small house with a loving wife than to live in a wide house with a bickering woman, you know. And she's only going to bicker because the husband's getting all, you know, pushing the buttons to some extent. So she goes on to say that if the husband and wife would only continue to cultivate these attentions which nourish love, they would be happy in each other's society and would have a sanctifying influence upon their families. They would have in themselves a little world of happiness and would not desire to go outside this world for new attractions and new objects of love. Many women pine for words of love and kindness, and the common attentions and courtesies due them from their husbands who have selected them as their life companions. And, you know, the occasional, you know, bouquet of roses, or, you know, or just a gentle I love you, or, you know, the, or little pet names and stuff that you have for each other and stuff, or, I mean, just saying I love you on a daily basis. For some people, that's very hard to say, especially if you're a teenager and you got that puppy love thing going on. I remember the first time, you know, I was just afraid to say it. But then that's not really love. That's just infatuation and all this other stuff. It's just the enemy's souls cultivating or planting seeds, and he's going to cultivate later in your life. So, again, stay on your knees and stay in the Word. But she goes on, she says, it is these little attentions and courtesies which make up the sum of life's happiness. If the hearts were kept tender in our families, if there were a noble, generous difference to each other's tastes and opinions, if the wife were seeking opportunities to express her love by actions and courtesies to her husband, and the husband were manifesting the same consideration and kindly regard for the wife, the children would partake of the same spirit. The influence would pervade the household, and what a tide of misery would be saved in the families. And I wish that we would have had this when we were growing up, too, because I know, and I can't take this, because I always, it irks me when I hear people talking about their childhood, and they say, oh, you know, I had a lousy upbringing, and this is why I am the way I am today. I says, yeah, well, that's just an excuse. It's just like this one guy I used to hang with years ago. He hates women to this day. He likes pounding on them and stuff like that. I mean, real tough guy, you know, beating on women. Go figure. And anyway, he hates all women because the way his mother, what his mother did to him. I says, man, you're in your 40s, man. Grow up. Your mom was wrong, but why do you got to carry that anger, you know, that she cultivated? You're supposed to be a man, so man up. And but a lot of people just can't forget all that for some reason. It's like chipping at stone. They can't get a piece of it off. And it will. Oh, it will mess with you. And that's one of the beauties I love about Jesus Christ, is that amazing miracle that I always talk about when he changed my mind on that day 30-some years ago. And totally different person after that day. I could never have expected that. I thought it was going to be a gradual process, you know. And sure, it was in a lot of ways. I mean, there were other parts and issues that I was going through that I had to learn to walk away from, because he wasn't cleaning the whole plate. He was making it overwhelmingly obvious to me that he was there, and then he was showing me as I went day by day on how I need to get this out of my life or that out of my life, just to see if I would remain obedient. Because it was, I mean, he could have very easily done it with all of us. Just all of a sudden, wipe the whole plate clean, and you're out there like a brand new, spanking, Christian where nothing in life affects you in any way, shape, or form. In other words, you're literally walking on water on day one, but that's robotic worship. That's, you know, he wants us to grow in our own pace, too. We have to learn as we walk, you know, baby steps. And it makes for a better experience. I mean, just look at the wisdom, the way he's handling Satan. When Satan fell 6,000 years ago, he could have just snuffed him out at that time. Had he done that, all the angels would have been worshiping Christ out of just abject fear. But instead, they saw the beauty in how he allowed him to have his say. Sure, yeah, it took 6,000 years for him to have his say. But we're talking in eternal forms. And still, 6,000 years is a drop in a bucket compared to what we have ahead of us. And so, but still, it shows, you know, it changed that from abject fear to reverent fear. You know, where the whole mess of love's involved. And in this last paragraph, she says, every couple who unite their life interests should seek to make the life of each as happy as possible. That which we prize, we seek to preserve and make more valuable if we can. In the marriage contract, men and women have made a trade, an investment for life, and they should do their utmost to control their words of impatience and fretfulness even more carefully than they did before their marriage. For now, their destinies are united for life as husband and wife, and each is valued in exact proportion to the amount of painstaking effort put forth to retain and keep fresh the love so eagerly sought for and prized before marriage. And again, and you see this a lot with the Muslims. Because I don't know, like, I had well, she's still alive. I have a niece who married a Muslim man. And she eventually ended up divorcing the guy because, well, he was Muslim and he was insane. But before, while he was courting her, oh, he was Mr. Nice and all this other stuff, you know, I love you this, I love you that, gentle this, I, you know, hold the door open, all of a sudden, as soon as he got that ring on her finger, yeah, they also do rings, it was just hell on earth for her. And it went on for years, and then she finally got out of it. I don't know how she, I don't know whether he, you know, committed sin or anything like that for her to have the legalities to step out, scripturally speaking, but she embraced the Muslim religion by force. And she has since left, of course, and now hopefully she's seeking Christ, because I remember years ago talking to her about Islam. And the Lord did water some of those seeds, because she did mention certain things when I saw her at the funerals. And but yeah, there's a lot of guys that do that, you know. Where the minute they get the woman, that's it. You know, but before the woman says, I do, or before she says yes to his proposal, they are lovey-dovey, you know. Yeah, well, Vera's had some, I sent her an email, hopefully she gets it, because I got word from Ace or Craig or somebody that Vera is having trouble getting in the room and that she changed her password. I'm trying to figure out how she changed her password, because as far as I know, I'm the only one that could do that for her, so I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know. I haven't looked at the login page. Can you change your password in the software? I asked whoever sent me the information on her to have her email me, and I'll help her. I mean, if she forgot her password, we'll just build a new one and put it on the server, and I'll give it to her, and then, you know, we can go from there. But as far as I know, she's okay, but she's a constant source of prayer right now because she's in Palestine. And Israel is slamming that area big time with all sorts of bombs and stuff. And Palestine, of course, tries to retaliate, and then they're using that Star Wars things that that Reagan started pushing, where they're shooting missiles out of the sky. So 90% of the missiles that Palestine or anybody sends over to Israel, they don't make it. They get blasted out of the sky. So, yeah, keep praying for her. And hopefully she'll make it in tomorrow. And there's a couple other people that were having a hard time getting in here, too. For whatever reason. I don't know why. Because it's one of the easiest softwares to get in. But, you know, what are you going to do? I guess some people don't use computers as often as others. That's the only thing I can think of. So, anyway, I hope and pray that you were blessed. I'll be back in a minute.